Anyway, do you read up on genetic engineering? Because you always read up on Jewish history stuff that I give. I just want to know if I get it. Okay. But, okay. So, okay.
Blank to blank
swing
to
blank. Okay. Okay. You read up on genetic. Okay. You read up on genetic. Okay. So, so we're going to talk about genetic engineering. We're going to talk about what's called PGD. Okay? So PGD, the first source, is so PGD is pre-implantation genetic diagnosis. So, okay? So before you... So what is PGD? Everyone have a source sheet? Okay. So everyone have a source sheet? So what is pre-implantation genetic diagnosis? Going right into it. So the first source, first off, PGD can only be performed in conjunction with in vitro fertilization. Right? In vitro fertilization is where we fertilize an egg outside the womb in a laboratory. Right, as in all IVF, an egg is fertilized in the laboratory and allowed to grow for a few days. Before the fertilized egg is reintroduced into the mother, one or more cells are removed from the egg. So you have this fertilized egg, and then the genetic material of the extracted cell contains information about the way the egg will continue to grow and develop. In PGD, so you diagnose the genetics of the fertilized egg. In PGD, the DNA of the extracted cell is expanded and analyzed to see if the specific egg has the characteristic that we are trying to find. The characteristic could be certain abnormalities. The characteristic could be gender, right? Boy or girl. Characteristic could be blonde hair, blue eyes, supermodel, right? There could be, right? I'm saying there are different categories here. So if the fertilized egg contains the desired characteristics, the IVF procedure resumes and the egg is reintroduced, implanted in the mother with the hope that she'll become pregnant and carry the child to birth. PGD can be used as a tool to identify thousands of characteristics. If the DNA marker for a characteristic has been identified, we can search for that specific marker to guarantee a desired outcome. As such, we can not only use PGD to prevent genetic illnesses, we can also use it to determine the gender or eye color of the future baby as well. Right? So this is something, this is an evolving technology. If I were to ask you, yeah?
Oh, just an aside, as I mentioned that what I've been reading is that given the recent Supreme Court ruling in Roe v. Wade,
right,
depending on what state you live in, there's going to be a lot of litigation forthcoming having to do with genetic engineering and with in vitro fertilization and treatment of fertilization.
Okay. So I'm not gonna respond to that. No, I'm not. I mean, maybe. I mean, right. I don't know. Like, I hear what you're saying. Yeah, we don't know. Depending on statute. Right. I don't want to, go far afield, but you're right, maybe. If I were to ask you, you know, what do you think about genetic diagnosis in terms of when there could be certain illnesses, right, certain genetic illnesses, I think our inclination would probably be more favorably disposed. When you get to the, you know, try to create blue, whatever, certain eye color, certain hair color, other kind of, I think we're less comfortable. That's what I would assume most people would be. So the question is, what does halacha have to say about this? I think this is an example, or as we'll see, in my opinion, where there is a halachic analysis, and then there's also probably some hashkafic perspective as well. Okay? So there are three pieces to this, I think. Number one is, there might seem to be an obvious answer to this question in halacha. It's not 100% so simple. We'll see there's some discussion. What types of medical treatments are permitted according to halacha? And then we'll talk about, can you destroy fertilized eggs in the context of PGD? And is it permissible, let's say, for is the reason for There's the reason important why you're engaging in PGD. So the first question is, what types of medical treatments are permitted? Now, I'm making an assumption here, which you could challenge. You could take the view, of course you're allowed to treat someone. Someone's sick, you're allowed to treat someone. Well, maybe you could take the view that, you know what, if you take a very, now again, I don't think modern day people, modern thinkers will think this way, but if you take the view, you know, that whatever happens, God determines whatever happens, a very deterministic worldview, maybe you say, don't treat people. That's Christian science. Okay, right. So I say that, I think modern thinkers don't think like that. But the Torah, I don't have the source here, but if you look in Rashi, you know, in Parshas Mishpatim, where the Torah says, Virapo Yerape, in a certain context, the Torah says, and he should heal someone, and Rashi quotes a Gemara and says, Mikan, that this is, there's a source, where the Torah is saying, Virapo Yerape, there's a source to say that doctors are allowed to heal people. So like, what does that mean? Well, of course, why shouldn't you think you're allowed to heal people? Maybe you could take the view that maybe not. Or maybe it means, are you allowed to heal someone when there's a risk involved, when they could injure the person? But bottom line is that halacha allows you to heal someone. The question is, what are the parameters of medical treatments? What's considered a medical treatment? And I want to draw your attention. I apologize. This is all in Hebrew. I'm going to translate everything here. Okay. A lot of this stuff's in Hebrew. I'm going to translate the sources here. The Tzitz Eliezer is Rav Eliezer Waldenberg. He's pretty famous now, going back to Roe v. Wade, because he's the lenient view. It's actually interesting, right? You know, you have different halachic authorities on some issues. You know, the people want the lenient views like one rabbi, and other issues, the people who want the lenient view like a different rabbi. I'm just saying, like I'm not talking about abortion here, but in abortion, the abortion issues, Rav Tzitz Eliezer takes the more permissive view along abortions, whereas Rav Moshe Feinstein is more strict. This is an example where there are positions where we're going to see Rav Tzitz Eliezer is more, Rav Waldenberg is more strict in a certain issue, and Rav Moshe Feinstein is more lenient regarding what types of medical treatments. And I apologize, again, it's all in Hebrew, but I'm going to translate everything. He first cites Rav Waldenberg. He died not so many years ago. He was the posek halachic authority of Shaarei Tzedek Hospital, and he says v'davar gadol hishmianu hagon baal Shaarei Tzedek zal b'toras reshut haripui, and he says that something great. The baal Shaarei Tzedek. This is a rabbi named Rav Menachem Panay. He was a 19th century rabbi, and he says regarding l'ripui akarot. You know what an akara is? Someone who can't have children, right. So fertility, treating fertility. So he wrote some opinion regarding fertility, and he makes the argument, okay, which Rav Waldemar is going to argue with. He says that fertility, that's not considered medical treatment. Okay, again, Rav Waldemar is going to argue on this. So there's a rabbi who said that what you're allowed to treat someone in terms of medical treatments, so that's treating pain, treating illness. But infertility, he argued, is not. Now, again, Rav Waldemar is going to disagree with that. He said, Nirfinius Daiti, the Devar Duchulim. I think his opinion is pushed off. He can reject it. Kiesh bedavar zeh mishum toelas lekiyum halam. That in having children, there is a purpose for the world, that God did not create it to be empty. So there's a mitzvah involved in trying to populate the world. And he says, Jews throughout generations have been finding medical treatments for fertility. So Rav Waldenberg takes the view that fertility treatments are permitted according to halacha. This is considered medicine. However, he says, ulam, im kenidon shel Shaarei Tzedek, pashut lahatir, kefi minhagam shel Yisrael bazeh. He says, okay, so even if we're working with the judgment of Rabbi Panay, certainly we can permit when it comes to fertility treatments. But I think that there are ramifications to what Rabbi Panay is saying, that not all treatments are permitted. But what? Benogea linituchim plastiim. What do you think? Plastic surgery. So he's saying, what about plastic surgery? What about plastic surgery? Is that permitted under virapo yirape? So, okay, all right. Let's say it's, okay, you're right. Let's say it's purely cosmetic. So shemavatzim ka'etz, harofim, he tells you your point, Howie, that the doctors are performing. Now, it's a harbe b'nei adam l'shem yipoy evoreham, for the purpose of beautifying their limbs. Right? So obviously, sometimes if plastic surgery is for medical, so that's something different. Right? So I don't think, when there's no illness, no sickness, I don't think anyone's going to argue that, let's say, God forbid, someone is being treated for, you know, a treatment, because there's pain, there's illness, and what? Right. So once we're treating someone to make them look, you know, good, I don't think anyone would argue. But let's say it's like, the nose job for shiduchim. Right? Okay. I'm saying that's okay. Just for that purpose. V'yesh makom gadol, and like you said, he says v'yesh makom gadol letat. Like he says, Rabbi Panay, who says that infertility is not a medical treatment, I disagree with that. But I'm not so sure when you get into plastic surgery. Then we're going to see how it applies to perhaps our case. Yeah?
Isn't there an element of the mental state of the...
I hear what you're saying. You're saying that maybe... Right.
Physical, health.
Right. Yeah. In other words, what you're saying is potentially... If the person is so, now everything can be meant, the question is how much, but maybe if it caused severe, severe distress, so maybe, okay. So he says, V'yesh makom gadol l'tana zot shelo kagon dahu shenitna Torah reshus l'ropi l'rapos. And he says, I think you could make a great claim that when the Torah allows you to treat someone, not for cosmetic surgery. He says, "Ima filo nikra zu b'shem lirapot." Is this even called refut, like medical treatment? Ve'ein reshut libnei adam l'aseis l'rofim l'chabol ba'atzmam l'shem matarazot. And you don't give, and you can't give permission to doctors to wound themselves for this purpose. Now, wounding yourself for no purpose, there's actually a Torah prohibition. Now again, this is a purpose, is not a purpose, is a valid purpose. V'gam ein reshus l'rofe l'batzeazo. The doctor cannot engage in this process. V'yesh l'adasu l'hamin, and one should know and believe. Ki ein tzayar kelokedu. There's no craftsman, no designer like God. V'hu yisparach shemo tzar v'itbia l'kol echad v'echav miyitzurav. God fashioned everyone in their own way. So he says like that what you're doing is, in a sense, I think he's saying a little hashkafa as well. He's saying that what you're doing is, if someone's engaged in some kind of purely cosmetic surgery, you're sort of making a statement to God like, you know who you created, whoever you created, it's not... I'm not happy with how you created me. Now again, he may not be dealing with your situation if there's severe, mental, if there's say something disfigurement or there's something, the person for whatever reason is going through, you know, some kind of severe distress as a result of, so that might, maybe that's a different case. But in any case, I want to go through the debate between Rabbi Waldenberg and Moshe Feitzin regarding cosmetic surgery, and then see how we can think they might apply this to, let's say, genetic diagnosis here.
Isn't today mitzvah to have children?
Yes.
Therefore, if you can, there should be, if there's an available treatment,
you should. So that's what he's arguing, Rabbi Panay. So he's saying... He's saying that's what I think is one of his arguments, that he's saying that the ki yesh bazemishum twel sekimom delola tobra. I think he's saying that there is a mitzvah to do that. Rav Panay might say that he might respond. I didn't see Rav Panay's argument inside, he just quotes him, he might respond that there's a mitzvah, but you can't necessarily violate, I'm not saying it's a violation, I don't believe it's a violation, but he might argue that there's a mitzvah to do it in the normal way, but there might not be a mitzvah. There's an interesting question, by the way, if someone has a child, the post-game discussed, if someone has a child via IVF, so are you feeling the mitzvah of procreation? Because maybe the mitzvah is only in the normal way. They discussed this issue. So maybe you could debate that point. Maybe. I don't know exactly what he holds about. But in any case, that was Rabbi Waldenberg. So he held that, let's say, purely cosmetic surgery, it should not be done. Rav Moshe Feinstein disagrees. This is in Choshe Mishpat, Chelek Bey, Simon Samachvav. Nishalti benara shirotze liyapos atzma. A young girl who wants to beautify herself so that they're going to jump, right? Yikfutsu. They're going to get to she'll do shiduchim. Aide ma'ashim tziu ataharofim. And now that the doctors have created aide nituach, a procedure, shu chavala begufo, that's causing, it's causing a wound in her body, but obviously it's, the goal is to beautify herself. So he's not even addressing the medical issue. He's saying, are you allowed to wound yourself for this purpose? And he writes here that the Rambam writes that he said that chavala, wounding, is only forbidden what he calls derech nitzayon or derech bizayon, in a degrading manner, in a destructive manner. V'im kein, be'uvda zu, in this case, shachavala hu liyaposa, that here the wounding is for to beautify her. It's eno derech nitzayon ubizayon, that when the Torah says you're not allowed to wound someone, that's in a destructive manner. This is obviously in a constructive manner, so it's not a problem. And it's interesting, but Moshe Feinstein doesn't even address the potential issue of, well, is this considered ripoy? Is it not considered ripoy? So Moshe Feinstein obviously holds that it is included in the broader category. By the way, and this is not, I mean, he doesn't bring in the issue, well, it might cause her mental stress. He doesn't think of the issue at all to begin with. So question, how would you apply, it would seem to me, maybe you could disagree, it would seem to me that from a medical standpoint, to determine, let's say, the eye color or the gender of the child, it would seem to me that Rav Moshe probably would have no problem with it from this perspective. From a medic, it's not, you're not doing anything, you know, from a, there's no, there's, you're not doing anything destructive here, that there's a purpose, whether you agree with the purpose or not. It would, the Tzitz Eliezer, I'm not sure 100%. The Tzitz Eliezer might hold, if the goal is to prevent genetic illnesses, I think that Tzitz Eliezer, Rav Waldenberg would probably say, it's okay. If you're doing this, let's say, because you want to create a supermodel, let's say eventually, I don't know what the technology is right now. I don't think we're there yet. But I think with the technology could be there at some point to create like a supermodel, basically based on genetics. So I'm not sure if the Tzitz Eliezer would feel that this would be ripoy medicine that is sanctioned by the Torah, right? Another, you know what I'm saying? In other words, Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rabbi Waldenberg have a debate on whether cosmetic surgery is permitted or not. So Rav Waldenberg thinks it's not permitted. Rav Moshe thinks it is permitted. So perhaps, again, they didn't rule on the issue of genetics because it wasn't an issue at this point. But it would seem to me, the Rav Moshe would say that this should be okay, and Rav Waldenberg, I'm not so sure. Okay, so that's sort of the first piece. Okay, so second piece is, would there be an issue? What would you do? So let's say you're looking for a certain genetic, abnormality, or you're looking for a certain eye color or gender, and you don't get what you want. So then, what do they do? Again, they remove this fertilized egg, then they diagnose it. So now, let's say it's not what you want. So are you allowed to destroy it? What do you think? Would that be, you don't think so, Gary? Why not?
It's killing.
You're killing.
What else?
Let's say you diagnose an illness.
Right.
But people think it's going to happen.
Right, right. No, I say, okay, no, so I understand. So, so that's what we have to go through.
Two sides of the same coin.
Yeah.
And
the question of viability is only viable if you implant it in the mother.
Right. So now there's, is there a difference? That's an interesting question. Yeah. Right.
Right.
Right. So they're always destroying. They're always destroying fertilizing. Oh, okay, they save it. So they may save it. Right. Right.
Most fertility groups will not implant more than two or three.
Right. Yeah, there's always an issue, right? Right. So how do you get around it? Right. Right. So in the so this relates a little bit to the abortion debate.
Okay, but
yeah,
like women will be given a choice that they choose to freeze some of them.
Right.
They have the option to freeze.
To freeze them, right? Right. 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 Yeah. Right. Right. Okay, so you have, yeah?
It's nothing to do with the abortion issue, because even the most restrictive states say...
I'm not talking about from the state standpoint. So the question is, well, it depends. So my point, I'm saying in the halachic abortion debate, so one of the issues is... is length of time, as you mentioned. So I'm just pointing out to you, there's a Gemara in Yevamos, and there are a few Gemara, but there's just one source here. The Gemara in Yevamos has the following case. Let's say a Jew, a woman who is a Kohen, she's a daughter of a Kohen, so she could eat Truma, okay? The Bas Kohen, daughter of a Kohen, can eat Truma. Let's say she marries a non-Kohen. Can she eat truma?
No.
So it depends. So she's allowed to until she has a child or until she's pregnant with a child. Right? It says, Haya Yisrael Shaba al Bas Kohen, Tocha Bitruma. So if she had relations, if a non-Kohen had relations with a daughter of a Kohen, she can eat truma. Ibra, once she's pregnant, lo tocha bitruma, because once she has a child, once she has a child with a non-Kohen, then she has a status of a non-Kohen. I don't get into all the details, but basically, young girls, her parents are a Kohen, so she's a daughter of a Kohen, so she could eat truma, you know, they have Cheerios, whatever, so she could eat the truma with her family. Once she marries, and she's with a non-Kohen, and they have a child, so then she's now, she can no longer have truma. And the halacha is, Rav Chista says, Tovels v'chels ad arba'im, v'imi abra ad arba'im, maya ba'amahi. So in the first, for the first 40 days when she's pregnant, she is still allowed to eat truma. Once the fetus is more than 40 days old, then she is no longer allowed to eat truma because she is now pregnant with a child from a non-Kohen. So
that's a medical basis, because she doesn't know she's pregnant.
Right. All right, so the question is, what happens when it's 40 days old? But the point is, in halacha, there are a number of examples when the fetus is 40 days old, where the Gemara says, the first 40 days, it's maya ba'alma. It's like water. Now, is it really like water? It doesn't have the same halachic significance before 40 days and after 40 days. So you should know there are some poskim who take different views on the abortion debate. Again, I'm not going to get into that, but there are some poskim who distinguish, some of the stricter views who say that abortion is murder. So some make a distinction between the first 40 days and post 40 days. My point being that, like Howie pointed out, so this fertilized egg is before 40 days. It's also outside the womb of the mother. And therefore, for the most part, most poskim hold that we're not concerned, like the organizations sort of deal with this, from a halachic standpoint, We're not concerned, again, if the goal, let's say, is to determine, are there genetic abnormalities? So the Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, for example, said that there's no violation of, even if you take, let's say, a strict view regarding, let's say, abortion, let's say this is before 40 days, and it's even outside the womb, okay? So if there is, so we're not concerned from a quote-unquote, abortion issue, if you're strict on abortion, we're not concerned because before 40 days and it's outside the womb of the mother. The other issue is that the Shulchan Aruch says, Asur lahotzi shichva zera levatala. One cannot release zera for no purpose. And va'avon zechomor mikol ha'vero shebatorah. So again, if there's a legitimate purpose, in other words, most poskim nowadays will say that if the goal is to determine a genetic abnormality, and that's why you're engaging in pre-implantation genetic diagnosis, so then we're not concerned with killing a nefesh, a soul, because before 40 days, it's outside the womb of the mother. It's not a violation of releasing zera, releasing sperm for no purpose. There is a purpose here. It's to determine a genetic abnormality, if there's a hereditary disease, and most poskim seem to say that it would be permitted. Yes. Right.
Between the baby being born with an actual disease as compared to predisposition to get a disease later.
The answer is probably. Their answer is, I haven't seen a lot of case studies. I think it's a good question. I think that there is a discussion about that and what's the likelihood and the predisposition versus there actually is a disease. I think the answer is yes. I remember when I looked at this.
Yes, what?
I think there is some. There could be distinctions in terms of. I mean, how likely is it? Is there a reasonable likelihood? But I think from a halachic standpoint, these things are permitted. It's more of a question of, is it the right thing to do? In other words, it's there's the is it. If you're following Moshe Feinstein, so there's a purpose. So you're allowed to treat this, right? Is this destroying something, a soul? Is it destroying a living thing? So it's before 40 days outside the womb of the mother. So it would seem that's not a problem either. Is you releasing zera for no purpose? So again, there is a purpose. I think your question gets to if there's such a small likelihood, do we really care about it? So I think there is some discussion about that. I don't know. It probably depends on the posek in terms of that. Because it's not only it has disease, the likelihood, what's the likelihood, right? So you can get into all the details about that. So I'm not prepared to the answer is a long-winded way of telling you, I've seen discussion on that. It's very fact-specific. So I'm saying it's not only if the child, if it has disease versus the likelihood, there's also what the likelihood is.
And what the disease is.
So I'm saying it gets into a lot of that. So the answer is potentially yes. So what I want to go through, I think our inclination, and this is also secular society where it is right now, is that we're uncomfortable with genetic selection, with genetic selection for certain characteristics, because you get into I want to create supermodels and survival of the fittest. I think in general, that halacha is where secular society is right now, where we're generally, I think, not in favor of this. I think when it comes to when there's a certain amount of likelihood of a disease, a hereditary disease, I have here, this is a tshuva from B'marei HaBazak. It has to do with gender selection, but actually relates to a hereditary disease. Basher l'shimush b'drachim eila k'dei likboa es min ha'ubar. So let's say you want to engage in genetic selection, gender selection. Why? Mutar hadavar, it's permitted, kasher huba limnoa machala turshatit. If sometimes you want to have the gender selection because you want to deal with to prevent a hereditary disease, hakshura lachromosome hazachari X, kagon machalat hemophilia. Very good. So Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach said, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach allowed pre-implantation genetic diagnosis when it was for a medical reason. Right, a taste would be another example. Right, right.
What about the BRCA gene?
Okay, so again, this goes to sort of Mandy's question of what's the likelihood and how much. So I haven't seen the chuvos on that, but I'm saying that if it's something that it is, you know, very likely, it could be a significant issue. How much? I think it's very fact specific. Mm-hmm. You know, because some of these genetics are just a predisposition and it could be treatments. So I think but if it's something that's clearly...
Those two are if you're
T-sex and you're not... I'm saying, she said the BRCA gene. That's it. The BRCA gene, I think it's not, right? I'm not a medical expert, but I think that's a different category than hemophilia and taste sex, I think. Yeah.
You can see how difficult it is halakhically to react to issues of health. How about to put it the other way? Can we agree that absolutely it is not permitted to be affirmative in selecting in eugenics, for example, where you seek to improve?
No. So again, I haven't seen halachic authorities allow for something that's completely eugenics, like just to create. Right. What's interesting is gender selection for maybe pure. Right. So, okay. So let's talk. So that's an interesting question. Okay. Wait. So the question is, would you be allowed to engage in PGD for gender selection to fulfill the mitzvah or puravu? And this gets to your question, Amirna, right? Like you're right. Is that appropriate? You're saying there's a mitzvah, but is there a slippery slope once you do that? But it's a mitzvah. So how do you sort of go about that? You should know there is a Gemara. Yeah, Alan? Right. Are you saying if you can improve someone's genes to get a better quality? Okay, I don't know. I haven't seen that. I don't know. Again, obviously, it gets potentially very dangerous, and we tend to be a little uncomfortable with that. So there is a Gemara. I don't understand the science about this, and it's a little uncomfortable Gemara. But the Gemara Nida Daf Lamed Aleph says that the way a couple is intimate. Okay, we'll leave it at that. That the way a couple is intimate, that may determine whether you have a boy or a girl. Okay? I don't think it's scientifically correct. Okay? I don't think it's scientifically correct. But why am I telling you this? The reason I'm telling you this is that the Gemara, what it says is, why is somebody telling you that? There's a rabbi, Rabbi J.D. Bleich, said that maybe the Gemara is telling you that there might not be anything inherently wrong with trying to have a boy or a girl. The question might be the method. That's what I'm saying. I'm not here judging on Talmudic science here. I'm not saying Talmudic science. But there's an interesting question. The Gemara basically tells you that, if you want to have a boy, do this. Again, I'm not saying, I can't speak to the science of this. But, there's a mitzvah, to have puravu, the Shulchan Aruch says, if you have you fulfill the Torah obligation of puravu through a boy and a girl. So the question is, if you have a boy or if you have a girl and you want, would it be legitimate to engage in PGD to try to select gender? So I will tell you three cases. I'm going to finish with this. I'm going to tell you three cases where some poskim have been lenient, but they're not so simple. The first case says sperm donor yichud case. What do I mean by that? So let's say there was a sperm donor, right? So in other words, the man and woman are married, so the man cannot father a child. So now they get a sperm donor, okay? So there's a question in halacha whether if you have an adopted child, is there a violation of yichud? Now, I'm going to point out to you, Rav Moshe Feinstein is lenient as long as both parents are alive. The Tzitz Eliezer of Waldenberg is lenient if you adopt a child when they're young. But other poskim are strict. Lubavitcher Rebbe was very strict. Now, Lubavitcher, by the way, had no children. He adopted a child. Lubavitcher Rebbe, and there are others, felt that the only leniency of Yichud is biological parents and children. I'm not going to debate this point, but I'm saying it's a debate. Okay. So let's say you have a couple that they take a strict position of Yichud. Okay, meaning what? If they have an adopted child, so then they can't be alone with that child. So let's say you have a case, right? Okay, so it's a case of a sperm, right? So it's a case of a sperm donor, right? So the mother is going to be the halach mother, Avram's married to Sarah. Avram can't have a child. So then Sarah gets a sperm donor, and they have a child. So Sarah is the biological mother of the child. There's no violation of Yichud. Avram is not going to be the biological father of the child. And therefore, let's say they're strict on this. Are you allowed to engage in gender selection so the child will be a girl so you don't have Yichud problems?
I'm sorry, the reverse, a boy.
Are you allowed to engage in gender selection to have a boy so that there's no violation of Yichud? Again, if they're taking a strict position. So there was a posek who was leaning in that case of gender selection. Okay? Another interesting case, give you another case. Thank you for the correction. Another interesting case, hopefully I get this gender right this time. So here, another case of a sperm donor. Okay? And Avram is married to Sarah, but let's call it Levi is married to Sarah, because Levi is a Kohen. Okay, so Levi is married to Sarah, Levi's a Kohen, and they're going to have a child, but through a sperm donor. Is the child a Kohen? No. It's going to be a little weird. The father is going to be called up as a Kohen, and maybe so there's a general question. Do you let the child know that they come from a sperm or not? So these are, so some may advise psychologically, you should let the child know at some point, okay? So let's say, for example, the couple decides they're not going to tell the child. That's a separate, separate psychological question that's beyond my pay grade. But let's say, or maybe they don't want the whole world to know. They don't want the whole world to know that this child came from a sperm donor. But you can't give the kid Kohen, Aliyah, because he's not a Kohen. So then you'd want to do gender selection to have a girl, right? That's right, to have a girl, okay. Yeah?
Can you just say that the child
is halal without anyone? Okay, I'm not saying you could say that, but then people.
I don't think the first assumption point must be a sperm donor.
So it wasn't halal. But let's say the couple is uncomfortable with the fact that people are going to talk about what does it mean, this, that. People talk. So even take halal. I understand. So maybe just to solve the problem, why don't you do gender selection? This will be a girl, so no one's going to talk at all. Okay. So Rav Lichtenstein actually said, he's like, what's the big deal? He didn't think, but he said, like, why should you be embarrassed? Whatever. He was saying that why should you be embarrassed, but he felt, and there have been poskim who allowed gender selection in this case as well. You had a question?
No, just, I don't know.
Yeah.
Right.
And then for what?
If it's a boy, why can't he go?
Why can't he get as a Kohen Aliyah? Yeah. Halakhically, you're not allowed. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. But that's not the way the halakha.
They don't want the whole world to know.
Right, they don't want the whole world to know. But I'm saying, halakhically, you can't, as someone who's a, you can't, we don't say that. If you adopt a child, they have the same status as the adopted father. We just don't say that. We can want to change that, and it could be covered up brios, a nice thing. I can't. That's the way the halakha works. Yeah.
Would the assay of purity of Arubia trump the
No, but you're assuming you can't accomplish both. In other words, there are poskim who will say that they have to be. It's not easy. I'm not saying it's easy, but they're not saying not to adopt a child, but they're saying adopt a child, but you have to be careful with the laws of yichud. I'm not saying it's easy, but it's not. You're making it either or. It's very, very challenging, and you have to create safeguards. It could be certain leniencies, but you could theoretically have a situation where you create a setup. It's not going to be easy. Where they have a child, but they follow the laws of Yichud. Okay, yeah.
Okay. In the IVF clinics in Israel.
Yeah.
My daughter, who wants the whole world to know, all of her children were IVF babies.
Okay.
And in where she went, the majority of patients were Haredim.
Okay.
Because they go out of their city.
Right. Okay.
And what, of course, the ladies walk. And they didn't want to have the issue of Yehud when the husband had either basically almost a zero sperm count.
Right.
They mixed sperm. The husband's sperm and the donor's sperm. And the halakhic assumption was, as nobody knows, which sperm actually fertilized the egg, and it's a non-issue.
And therefore there's no issue of Yehud? Okay.
It's not considered, quote, an adopted baby.
I haven't heard that. It's interesting. I will look into that. That's an interesting halacha. I understand. I'm not sure. Okay. I can't speak to that. I'm sure there are. If someone is using. I understand. I mean, we. But why is someone using a sperm donor? They're using a sperm donor presumably because the husband is not able to father a child. You're saying that even you're saying when you're there are what you're saying. Wait, what you're saying is I'm saying when you're what no, that was what you're saying. Wait. What you're saying is if they've tried, you know, for a long time, so there still is a 1% chance. So therefore, we can assume that maybe he is the father. Okay, interesting. I'm not sure if everyone would agree with that position, but it's an interesting position. I don't know. By the DNA. So maybe they don't. Okay, interesting. Okay. Let me do it. So the final case, and we'll finish with this. Okay, the final case here is the following. Okay, and this is an interesting case. I'll tell you why, because I read this case in two different articles. I think they're talking about the same case. Seems to me they gave two different reasons for this. So, what if you have six children? So, Rav Vadya Yosef Paskin, that if you have six children of one gender, you would be allowed to have a child of a different gender. And Rav Mordechai Eliyahu allowed it. If you had five children of one gender, you could have the child of the other gender. And what's interesting, one second. So, in tradition, there's a tradition journal. This is a scholarly journal put up by the Rabbinical Council of America. So there, they seem to say the reason is because based on the mitzvah of Puravu. So now there is, what's going on here to me, it seems, is that there's this balance between, there's not only the halachic issue, like why is it making a difference between one child or five children? There seems to be this tension. It's not only a halachic, it's a quote unquote a meta halachic issue where you don't want to run to slippery slope of like, okay, you know, make it easy. Could be that after, you know, how likely is it that someone's going to have five children of one gender and then want to do this? In other words, if they're concerned with the slippery slope issue. What? It could be. Okay, so maybe, okay, how likely to have five and then one? Okay. So, in the PUA, Machon PUA, this is the organization that deals with fertility in Eretz Yisrael. It's a halachic. They get a lot of halachic questions. So in their article, when they mentioned the case about the five children from Mordechai Eliyahu, there it seemed like it was psychological. There was severe distress. There was severe distress by the parent or one of the parents that the parent had five children of one gender. Okay, and so maybe when there is severe distress. So that might be a reason to allow gender selection. So what we've seen here, just to sort of summarize, put everything together, is it seems to me that Again, if we're working with Moshe Feinstein, who takes a much broader view, and others like him, take a much broader view of the halachic permissibility of treatment, not simply to release pain or to heal illness, but even more broadly, to engage in medical treatments, or we're calling something a medical treatment, if there's a constructive purpose, right? We're working with that assumption. Here it might be, right? And then there seems not to be, the poskim seems to say, that generally because it's before 40 days, and it's outside the womb of the mother, so it seems that the poskim are generally lenient from a pure halachic standpoint about destroying the fertilized egg if it has, you know, let's say if it has a hereditary disease, again, assuming the purpose is legitimate. And then you get to the more of the, I would say, more of a hashkafic question, which is, when is it desirable, not desirable? I think in halacha, when you come to contemporary halacha or any halachic topic, so we first, people sometimes have come in, whatever topic, those are like, you know, very passionate views. So I think it's very important to look at what does the halacha say? And by the halacha, sometimes you look at the rules. Sometimes perhaps there are psychological elements which impact the halacha, which within the halakhic system. And then you ask yourself whether it's permissible or not. Is it desirable? Right? And then you get the quote-unquote hashkafic issue. And this, I think, is a good example of something which I think there's really a combination of the two. Because halakhically, is there a difference between, you know, creating a supermodel and curing, you know, disease? So on a technical, you know, check the box, you know, what are the rules? There might not be a pure halachic, but something like, you know, goes against, even though the Tzitz Eliezer, we tend to reject the Tzitz Eliezer. I think many poskim reject Tzitz Eliezer and say, for shiduchim purposes, someone can engage in someone's cosmetic surgery, but to engage in this on genetic level to create, you know, this kind of supermodel, I haven't seen poskim that allow that. And when it comes to gender selection, then it gets interesting. When the gender selection is based on something medical, there seems to be a permissibility. And when it's not based on that, when it comes to something that's psychological, and when it comes to something halakha like yichud, so I've seen the leniency. When it comes to an issue of something psychological, let's say about making it known the child is not a Kohen, the same as the father, or maybe if a parent is so distressed, they have five or six children of one gender, so there might be some room to be lenient, but that's sort of, you know, where we are in halacha, and this will continue to evolve as I think science evolves in this issue. Yeah.